Welcome to Sex with Simmery, frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com.
Hey, Sex with Simmery listeners. I imagine that you are like me and you like free stuff. Free stuff is pretty great. It's especially great when you have it in time for Valentine's Day. So check this out. When you go to adamandeve.com and you select almost any one item, you're going to get it for 50% off. And that's inherently amazing by itself. But here's where it gets real. The free stuff. So when you enter my exclusive code at the checkout, and that's Timarie, T-I-M-A-R-E-E, not only do you get 50% off on that one item, but you're going to get 10 tantalizing free items. You're going to get 6 free movies. You're going to get a free mystery pack that includes an item for him, a special toy for her, and something that multiple people can enjoy, plus free shipping. That is a lot of Valentine's stuff for free. So head on over to adamandeve.com and be sure to use my code. That's T-I-M-A-R-E-E. One more time, T-I-M-A-R-E-E at adamandeve.com. Hello, welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Timmery, and we are back with the second half of this incredible episode. If you haven't already heard the first one, head on over to the first half of the episode where we introduce you to the fine folks of the Tacony Music Hall. Welcome back to part two.
I want to talk a little bit about, without getting like grumpy, because this is like a good conversation so far, like this can't have been easy to do in 2018 United States, in United States in any year. This could not have possibly been smooth sailing. And I happen to know that not everybody helped.
It's very nice.
That was so nice.
It's diplomatic.
That was so nice of Timmery.
Yeah, I mean, I think that any time you try to advocate for sex positivity in this America that we live in right now, you're going to face a lot of opposition. And I think that we've had a bunch of conversations lately about how we were really naive 3 years ago in not expecting a lot more of what we got, but we're so much more well armed now with how we know people to respond to things and how we can anticipate what people's perceptions of us are going to be and how we can mitigate those perceptions. And we have learned so much about how to educate people about who we are and how we operate. Because in an absence, one of the things that kink communities, I think, fails in is they don't educate the world about who they are. And therefore, in an absence of information, people speculate and make things up and fill the void with what they project their own fears onto their lack of information. And I think that happened a lot for us. We announced we were opening about 2.5 years ago. We faced a lot of backlash. We opened anyway. We operated in a neighborhood that didn't necessarily like us very much for a while. They have largely come around to us through an information and education campaign, basically, about who we were and how we worked. But yeah, Donald Trump's America, turns out it wasn't the greatest place to open your sex collective, but we did it.
I've got to say, though, that even with that characterization, I think that what was surprising to me is that the resistance actually was not as broad as it could have been, by far.
That's true.
We did encounter pushback, and the pushback that we encountered was significant, and it was substantial, and it required a significant amount of effort to respond. But the breadth of the resistance was not wide. It was a targeted group of people who were very specifically against us. But in general, there were no picket lines out front. There were no, you know, there wasn't any, you know, mass organized protest. You know, we had legal challenges from specific civic organizations, but we didn't have, you know, the neighborhood up in arms. Most of the neighborhood didn't even know we were here. A lot of the neighborhood still doesn't know that we're here because it's a quiet. Like, if you walk past it, you don't see anything. You might see some people smoking out front. But there's nothing that screams, hey, there's a, you know, kink club right here. There's a daycare in the first floor, and, you know, it's just a regular residential street. So I think that even in this climate that we're in, we could have faced a much larger resistance and we didn't. Mm-hmm. And I think that again goes sort of harkens back to how even when Philly is being cranky, it's still kind of accepting of its misfits. And I think that we benefited from that. So I think that once we got beyond the original original wave of resistance, which was less than 100 people specifically vocally in a town of thousands, I think that we were able to continue to be good neighbors to everybody else. I think we were able to establish ourselves as being good faith actors, as being really invested in the community, invested in, you know, when we first came out here, we did neighborhood cleanups, we did community outreach, you know, and so, and we've built relationships with local businesses, with local residents. So I think that it's actually impressive that for all of the drama of the pushback that we did get, the actual force behind it was not as strong as it might have seemed.
So that, I mean, it sounds like locally, this is, you know, starting to find its groove. In this particular time we're recording this, there's a lot of stuff like on a more national and international scale that I think I would be curious to hear what your thoughts are. So we've talked to a lot of our guests recently about how like FOSTA SESTA is impacting them. We're talking to them about how like social media, specifically Facebook recently changed or specified their community standards to say that you can't say what you're into sexually. Like if you were to put it out there that you were a submissive bottom, might lose your Facebook account. So with that in mind and whatever else you might be thinking could impact you, like what are your thoughts about weathering that?
I think that makes the space that much more important to people, honestly. It makes it that much more valuable to the folks that come here. And I also would say that's why we have people like Deb, who is an activist, and we have a few other trustees who are openly and activists and really are trying to fight a lot of that. And I think that it speaks a lot to our members and to us. I know for me, I feel like I've learned so much just from working with them, and I feel so more well-informed because of it. So I feel like it's not something I worry about too much because I feel like I'm working with the right people to stay in front of what's going on or be educated on what's going on. And I know that they're going to fight tooth and nail to make sure that it doesn't affect us as much as possible.
It's also really terrible timing. the changes to, for FOSTA and SESTA, like those things really came and came out in force around the same time that the community was finally starting to come out of its shell. Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of people were starting to realize that they could be more themselves in public. They could start to discuss things openly. People started to create Facebook groups and more mainstream areas for them to be safe and for them to talk about things, from kink to sex work to just sexual discussions and philosophy. All of those things were things that the trajectory was such that they were coming more out into the forefront. People were stepping out of the dark. The emergence of the hall was, you know, one thing that was sort of an indicator of a broader movement and push. And then as that movement and push was just starting to grow, there became this pushback from these laws and they're not even very well understood now by a large portion of the community, but to those who are organizing, those who are doing the logistics, those who have to figure out how to sell things, how to do transactions, how to bank, how to discuss, how to disseminate information. All of those things are things that are now being constrained by these laws, and it's making it so that it's taking sexual communities and painting them into a very small corner. So what's happening is that, you know, people are right. We're right in the middle now where people are starting to realize that the pushback is coming. You can see that there's the Tumblr bans and all of these social media sites are changing their community standards. They're shutting down pages like, you know, wholesale. So all of these things that are happening are now, you know, sort of oppressing a group that was just beginning to spread its wings out of depression. And it's really sort of inconvenient for it to be happening at this time, to put it lightly. But it's a thing that we're having to come and face on a larger scale.
And that we monitor and that we, you know, we have those conversations with each other. I mean, you're talking to four of us right now, but really it's a larger, this is just a piece of a larger body. Mm-hmm. And we have those conversations and we try to say, okay, like, we know this regulation just happened. What are we going to now try to do to get around it if we have to? Or what can we do to make sure it doesn't affect us?
Logistically, Sestafosta is coming. I say the same thing pretty much every day, which is that Sestafosta is coming for all of us. And a fundamental understanding of how sex negativity works in this country right now means that Sestafosta is just the beginning. And, mm-hmm. And as much as sex workers spent the last year and a half screaming that it was coming for everybody and making it really clear the implications of FOSTA-SESTA on people who were not sex workers or weren't even attached to the sex trade, it didn't matter. But what I'm seeing now, and it gives me like the very littlest sliver of hope in a very bleak landscape for how sex communities are going to be able to organize in the future, is solidarity that is growing between all the sex communities and people who are doing work in the sex trade and the different styles of work that are being done in the sex trade, because it is coming for all of us and it will fundamentally affect everybody who works in sex in some capacity or another. So this is what I am seeing, is a solidarity growing of, we all have to figure out how we're going to be present on the internet and how we're going to create safer space together, because if we continue to allow sex workers to bear the brunt of these laws without any infrastructural support or resources or signal boosting, like at the bare minimum, mm-hmm. at the bare minimum, if kinksters and poly people and all these communities that are greatly benefiting from sex positivity don't signal boost the hell and support the hell out of these sex workers who are screaming about how their lives are being affected, well, there's a House bill that's coming next, and the House bill is going to restrict anybody's ability to process payments. And that's what's next, is they're coming for our money. And that is when sex communities will be deeply affected. Because right now, Muppet sort of touched on it. This was a really unfortunate moment for this to happen to the internet, because kinksters were just starting to burst out of FetLife and enter other modalities. Kinky Twitter is like one of the greatest things that exists on this planet. And it is such a better organizing tool than FetLife has ever been, and you can fight me on that. But as these laws become, because Sestafosta is so broadly written, we have no idea what the full ramifications of it are going to be, because they can just keep regulating and keep building compliance law, or keep building compliance orders at these companies to restrict whatever we want to do on the internet. And like I said, the next thing that's coming is this House bill that was once again written by Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren that will restrict all of our ability to process payments. I'm an individual organizer separate from the hall, and I'm already facing issues trying to sell tickets to my events and process payments for events that have nothing to do with sex, just nothing to do with sex. But it doesn't matter, because my company has at some point sold tickets to an event that did have something to do with sex. So I can't sell tickets to my like Rope 101 workshop.
And it's closing. I mean, it's closing down a lot of avenues for everything. And like, as we're looking at these laws, you're realizing that it's not even specifically the legislation that passes. It's the threat of what that legislation does that causes companies, the private companies that are running these services, to preemptively go and narrow their nets down to the smallest, finest level possible. So a lot of this isn't even that somebody said, here's a law that says you can't do this. It says, here's a law that might come for you if you're going to do this. And the companies and their legal departments are all saying, well, fuck it. We're just going to not going to let anybody do anything that even smells like it's going to be something that's going to come after us. And so a lot of what's happening is self-censorship, but it's happening at the level of the providers of the space. So there's not an easy way to turn, like, literally we're just returning to email chains and, you know, cash transactions. Like, this is where we're being pushed to. And the danger is that when you disenfranchise a group from the central economy, from the essential, from communication, you do nothing but push it to the outskirts. You push it underground. You make it less safe. You push it to the margins. And that's what we're going to see again. And I think there's going to be somewhat of a conflict between the people who start to realize how many sex workers they know, how many people who have just come out as being part of these things. And I think people are starting to realize that these communities are way broader than they thought they were. But I think there is going to be, what seems like it's coming, is there going to be a clash between this push, which it's important to note, this push, the reason why it's being supported by people that we think of as being on the left or we think of being progressive, is because it is all written as being targeting to sex trafficking. Mm-hmm. And since sex trafficking is something that absolutely nobody is for, people are ready to jump on that. Nobody wants to be against sex trafficking legislation, but that means also that they are ready to swallow everything that comes along with that legislation and all of its ramifications. And this is yet another situation of people thinking that they're doing a good thing, but then realizing that they've gone so full force and so without really thinking it through, that they're going to harm everyone as they go forward. And that's going to become increasingly more apparent as we go forward.
You don't get to strip people's bodily autonomy to protect them. That's not how it works.
Yeah.
Yeah, funnily enough, no one actually consulted sex workers before writing Sestafalsa, even though the whole thing was like to quote unquote protect them. So I think what is going to start to have to happen in kink communities is, like Deb said, like we're going to have to start listening to sex workers and raising their voices, because this bill is coming for everyone, and it's coming for our organizational tools and our ways of communication. And if those things get cut off in any way, then we're going to go back to email chains and become a very gatekeepy, isolated community when we've only just started flourishing in really beautiful ways.
I would say that those elders that I referred to earlier as one of the reasons that kink communities in Philadelphia are so big, most of them are sex workers or were sex workers at the time. Like, the education and flourishment of Philadelphia kink communities in the 90s was mostly done by pro-doms who were teaching, who were doing the work, and who were organizing events. And like, that may have come from like a capitalist place, that may have come from a place that this was their job, but they still built one of the largest kink communities in the country by doing this work through a time where there was no PayPal, there was no ability to sell tickets on Eventbrite, there was nothing, there was just email lists, possibly at best. And we have this community in Philadelphia because there was this culture of like pro-doms who didn't just book clients, they taught classes. And like, that's where a lot of these people came from. A lot of the people that I know that taught at Passionnel in the early days, a lot of people who worked at Passionnel in the early days, they were all sex workers who were doing pro-dom work. And like, it would be truly tragic in this city if we don't continue to do the work, because I do think we are trying to do the work of raising up the voices of sex workers from all spectrums. Like, there's like a very large spectrum of sex work communities in Philly, and like making sure that we're listening to as many as we can is like our only job right now, because yeah, it's coming for everybody.
So I want to switch gears just a little bit before we all get very anxious. So can you talk a little bit about like the functional stuff, like how many people are members, how do you become a member, how is this place sustained, like how do you music hall,
how do you I'm gonna do a few nuts and bolts, and then we'll go around talking nuts and bolts stuff that we think is important. So to become a member of Philly Music Hall, you have to be vetted by two members of Philly Music Hall. That is not your only way to access membership. You can also email the board and request to be vetted for the hall. In the new year, we are creating a system where you can apply for membership to the hall, and then you will attend a new member orientation class and become a member of the hall. But for the past 18 months, the way you accessed membership at the hall was to be vetted by two members already. We recognize that process is a little gatekeepy, and it makes it hard to access the space if you don't know people who are in the space. Kink communities are not a trusting group, and as we built this club, we needed to be able to create safer space how we saw that for the time. As we get older and as we learn, one of the things that we're noticing is that we can make membership more widely available or make it more accessible to more people.
How many members do we have?
We have about 900 members.
Yeah.
Just over 900.
Yeah, we have have exploded about 900% in 18 months, or 900%, am I right there? Because we had 100 to start out with.
Yeah.
In 18 months, turns out people really like sex education when you make it accessible to them. We have two ways of doing membership. You can either pay $50 a month, and most of the stuff at the hall is free. And we make, and you can access the parties, the education, almost all of it for free. Some stuff is like $5 to $10, or you can pay a la carte and you can become a member. And then like a party is $25 and like game night's $5, and you just you pay for whatever you use in a month. So yeah, we try to figure out as many different ways for people to access membership as we can. And that is certainly an ongoing process.
And then we also do have some events that are open to non-members with the intent of hopefully those people will meet members at those events to become members. I think the roundtable that's going on right now is open to non-members. So that way, you know, if they're not members, they come and they meet people who are. You know, I know a few of the board members and trustees also attend that, and they say, hey, I met this person. They were really awesome. I think they would be a right fit for us. Which is another way we do it. We also advocate for people to go to Munches. So it's also kind of giving back to the community in that sense, because we're asking them to go to other people's events, really, and saying, you know, you can meet members there. There's plenty of members who go there. And so that's also another way where people kind of go out, socialize, you know, and meet people to try to get access to the hall.
Yeah, notable to say that like a lot of our membership policies are guided by the structure of our organization. We are officially a fraternal organization in Philadelphia, and as such, we have a number of restrictions as to how we can manage our membership, who we can allow in, and what the circumstances are. And a lot of that is by design. That's why we had this space, and it was how we were allowed to keep this space. But it also means that there's also, a lot of very specific, we have to be very conscientious with how we address membership and how we address accessibility, and trying to maintain that balance between being closed as a membership organization but accessible is definitely a thing that we're constantly fine-tuning.
So if people are interested in learning more based on what is available as of this recording date,
they can email membership@phillymusichall.com.
Okay.
And you'll access that will go directly to our membership committee, and you can chat with our membership committee, and they have the power to like make people members and also walk you through the process or provide you resources to other stuff in the city that like is good for newer people. If somebody presents to us in an email and says that they would like to become a member of the hall, but they've never attended a kink event ever, we're most likely going to direct them to like one of the public play parties or find out like what their interest lies in, because people almost always reach out to us looking to access a specific thing. Like, I have this kink and I think you guys can help me find space for it, or you guys can make space for it. And so we sort of try to like find out what's bringing them to us and see if we can put them in touch with a resource in Philadelphia that is like really newbie friendly. That being said, we do also have at least once a month an event that is open, to some form of an event that's open to non-members, and we direct people to those events. And usually that's how we end up with all of our members, is they come to something that is non-member, open to non-members, and then they meet a bunch of members and some people vet them.
I'm curious if anybody, because we have an assortment of folks here, have any questions or comments who have not been on the panel? Anybody want to chime in?
Will you talk?
Sure.
This is Mia Action, and they run the Power Exchange Roundtable that you were so curious about. You want to talk about your roundtable real quick?
Hey everyone, I'm Mia. So I've been a member of the hall since it opened about 2 years ago. And about 10 months ago, myself and another trustee, whose name is Syndicate, the two of us started an event called the Power Exchange Roundtable, which is an open discussion and support group, which discusses anything pertaining to DS, MS dynamics, so dominant submissive dynamics, and power exchange. with a kind of social justice lens of acknowledging the ways that our privileges and the ways we're marginalized influence the types of power we have access to and how we can intentionally subvert and play with power in a way that creates ultimately just a better quality of life for people.
I'm imagining that someone's listening to that and they heard words and they're like, I understand what those words mean as individual words.
Sure.
What does that mean? Like, so if I'm hearing you correctly, it sounds like what you're talking about is, you know, things like race and class and sex and gender identity and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. How does that impact relationship dynamics when we're talking
about power exchange?
About power exchange, yeah.
Well, in the same way that race, class, gender, size, ability, all of these things impact each interpersonal relationship differently, depending on who you are. Kink is just another added layer, so I couldn't speak to exactly, you know, how it impacts an individual dynamic. But what I can say is, based on what privileges and marginalizations, like how we fall on that axis, it does impact the resources that we have. That's kind of the way that I think about it. So depending on what types of privileges you have and what types of ways you're marginalized, that does impact the ways you have resources. So to me, there is, you know, a past, an old guard, I'd say, of people kind of non-critically thinking about power exchange as this pretty binary system that doesn't take into all these different accesses of oppression, and also doesn't take into consent. To take into account consent a lot. So,
and I do think some of it does, you know, and that's one of the things, not necessarily for power exchange, but for me personally, I do feel passionate about some of these things about marginalized people and exclusivity.
Yes.
And I think that it does really kind of affect the way you view a lot of dynamics. You know, I've spoken to several people openly about, you know, I'm a person of color, I'm biracial. And there's very much like a stigma for a lot of POCs about more so being, you know, kinky and doing these things that are might not necessarily be for another class or another group, and trying to really understand those and get to the bottom of that and help them oversee those stigmas that are put onto, you know, being kinky. I know I get it sometimes, and I tell people, like, yeah, I'm in a kink, and they're like, oh, like, you know, we don't do that kind of stuff. That's not us. So just really trying to educate people to understand that. So it really does actually play a role in it.
Also, as how you experience that kink, especially because, I mean, by definition, race and power are things that are very much in existence and at play all the time in everybody's relationships. And so realizing that when you're doing power exchange, that that is more complex than this sort of swapping or this, you know, sort of very simple binary like you were talking about. But, you know, looking at how you look at dominance versus submission as a black person, or in an interracial relationship, or, you know, all the different aspects of your identity that may already play into where you stand in terms of power dynamics with other people. That's a whole other layer, I think, that's being, that people are starting to realize. And as people of color are starting to get more of a voice within the kink community and are able to start guiding more of that conversation, that complexity of what that looks like, not even getting into sort of very specific things like race play, but just in the various ways that kink is expressed, that itself is a whole different issue, and it works into how one experiences power dynamics.
Yeah, so I came into awareness about, from my perspective, the need of there being a social justice lens on power exchange relationships because of my work as a femdom, as a dominatrix. And so realizing the ways that that female or fem dominance is commodified in pornography, and a lot of people have this misconception that female dominance means X, Y, and Z, and that it's for male consumption, and that it means just kneeling and bootlicking and pegging or whatever. And in the same way, I think that marginalized folks, people of color, black people, are forced into, I've noticed, this role, whether they're submitting or dominating, especially with a person who's white or not of their race, that if you're not being critical and thinking about the privileges you have when you're playing with this person, you can really harm them. And if you're not being cognizant of the privileges that you come into a relationship with, you can non-consensually force someone into participating in something they weren't comfortable with to begin with. And then it becomes about just fulfilling your kinks and then they're kind of being relegated to being a fetish dispenser.
I think one of the things that I'm seeing, especially Power Exchange Roundtable and other work that people like Muppet and Bev are doing with the hall, is really addressing the accessibility, not just like the inherent things that we bring in, because as white people, we bring in all the stuff from the regular world into kink communities, and we can create those toxic structures in kink communities if we're not careful. But what we're working towards here, I see, is recognizing what those are and building a space that actively works to break them down, and recognizes when we don't break them down, right, and recognizes when we fail to do the work accurately or correctly, or that and is willing to take like a pretty critical look at the fact that we're white people, we're a predominantly white organization that engages in that, makes mistakes and has to learn from those mistakes. Seeing in Power Exchange especially a way to lower the barrier of accessibility to more POC humans and more queer and trans humans to get access to how to build those dynamics in a way that is informed and actively consensual, but also a way to expose more white people to how those dynamics would look to people who don't reflect or don't hold their identities. Like what I'm seeing is this incredible info share just continually going on, wherein if the white members of the hall are willing to look critically at their behavior and do the work, boy, can they gain so much information from that willingness to be critical and to hear hard stuff, and just to hear hard stuff about how our community can harm people and how if we're not careful, we can harm people.
Awesome.
I was like just very here for that. Okay.
We have a limited amount of time, so just if other folks who haven't spoken yet.
Hello, my name's Baron. I've been a member for, I guess, just shy of a year, but it can't be understated how you walk around the different rooms in here and people are smiling, which I feel like has a different... people have a different attitude here. It creates a space that people are generally sharing and enjoying themselves, more so than a lot of with the clubs or the music, the pleasure gardens of the saints and sinners of the world. You have just a lot of scowls, and I rarely get that here. It's just much more smiley people. I know you guys have said it before that Philadelphia Music Hall is the Disneyland of kink, but I'll say it again for the podcast, if that's helpful.
I wouldn't have said this originally.
Who's saying that we're the Disneyland? Is it because we're all Muppety Disney-like creatures? Because that's sort of true.
Yeah,
we're all sort of cartoonish creatures.
That is very true.
Yeah.
That is very true. Yeah.
I can scowl more for you, Baron. That will make you... No.
The smiling is good. It's also really nice that you can bring people here who are not intimidated. Mm-hmm. You can bring people to the other clubs in Philadelphia, and they go into shock. You can see the look on their face. They're frozen, and they're frozen throughout the time. I've never had that experience here.
Yeah.
Everyone always finds something to enjoy themselves with or ask questions about or engage. And so it is a safe space for that, for bringing people. Without doing a lot of hand-holding or worrying about them.
And yeah. I think it's also because we have programming kind of a little bit for everybody. So, and, you know, I'm part of membership as well, and I know as part of membership, we do try to lean people towards the program we think that won't scare them the most and that will work for them so that they don't run out screaming. Because I've also had those events where I've gone there and, you know, I've seen someone there for an hour and they were super psyched about going. And then an hour they're there, they run out the building and they, like, delete their FetLife account in the parking lot because they're like, I'm done. I can't do this.
I think it's important to point out that, like, when we talk about the programming that we do here, in this little cadre of people, we have we have Freddie, who runs Dungeons and Dragons. They meet every other week. They run two simultaneous campaigns. They used to only run one, but it expanded, so now they need to run two campaigns a month. We have Bev, who did Bah Humbug Hangouts the other night, where they decorated all these cute gingerbread houses, and they made gingerbread houses all night.
Dungeons.
Gingerbread dungeons.
Oh, it's upside down.
Yes. They made it upside down. And then we have Toot, who runs our pagan ritual
that every so often, as well as our cleaning club called Aftercare or Afterclear. Yeah. And I, the more we meet people who are intimidated by an event or something, the more we come up with ideas that we think are innocuous and accessible, and it's generating so many. Part of the reason we're trying to open our membership up so much more is because we're getting to the point where we realize we're really good for new people. We used to think that this wasn't a club for new people, that this was like a club that you needed to access if you were had been in the community a while and you had all your tools and you knew all the things. And what we're realizing is we are the space in Philadelphia that's not going to scare the crap out of the most number of people. Not that everybody's going to be scared by the other spaces in Philadelphia. That's certainly not the case. But we have the highest likelihood of not freaking somebody out. And for that reason, we should work to be more accessible to a larger group of people. And that work is interesting and hard, but so necessary.
I saw a hand.
Oh, this is Marty, our director of programming.
Hello.
Hi. So as Deb said, I'm the director, well, co-director of programming with another lovely human being. And my name's Marty. And the greatest part about the hall is it lets me be really weird and embrace a growth side and let other people embrace their growth side. I run a party called Filthy on the first weekend of the month. It's a members-only party, but we have contests, and it has showed me that people love a good contest in Philly.
They really do.
In Gettysburg, not so much.
We just tried to run one of our contests in Gettysburg. It was not successful. But Marty has come up with the best contests.
Some of our contests have been seductive taco eating, seductive sausage eating, because you have to, you know, do both. Popsicles.
We did sexy popsicles.
It was, we give you popsicles, you impress us. A lot of it is very open-ended, and I let the members choose what they want to do with the object of the month. And, like, people gather and get sad. Like, the last 2 months I haven't had contests, they get sad when there's not a contest. Like, they were, like, gathering at, like, 11 o'clock. Everyone was gathering around here. And they were like, where's the contest? And I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. There's no contest this month.
Marty hit on something that's, like, really just, like, makes my heart beat every time, which is that if you want to do it here, we will make it happen. If it can't get us shut down and won't burn down the building, then we're here for it. And we'll help you facilitate putting it together. And we have Marty and our other co-chair is Bex Nymphadora, and Freddie does a lot of programming work, and Bev does a lot of programming work. And if a member or a community person brings us an idea and they say this is something that they want to do, we're going to figure it out and we're going to make it happen. And we have gotten so many of our best events by somebody just coming to us and saying, this is the thing that I want to do. Freddie came to us last year and said, I want to make this event called Wrestle Fuck. And it's an event where queers wrestle and fuck. And as it turns out, it's a hit. People love it. They love it. And it all comes out of Kinky Craft. We have a Kinky Craft night that came to us because somebody wanted to do that. And just like so many of our best, almost all of our events, aside from our party Hush, which is like, I think the only event we came here with. Everything's been created by a member. Every single event besides our one member party has been created by the members themselves.
Okay. Anybody else who hasn't chimed in yet? You want to hop in?
Toot.
Hi, I'm Toot. I'm one of the trustees. And one of the things I really like about the hall is that it's, what we were talking earlier about, it's changed my view on how all sex happens. I remember when we opened up, one of the people who was against us walked out of the building and asked, well, what is there to teach about sex? And I think that that's the thing that reinforces all the sex negativity and sex to FOSTA and all these things in general. And so creating a space, especially a meat space, like a real life space for people to come and gather.
And have the sex.
And have the sex, yeah.
And learn about the sex
and learn about themselves helps kind of counteract that. And I think actually sex positivity needs to be more meet Spacey, because I think a lot of the Sesta Fosta thing and the few numbers of people not supporting sex workers happened because it was in the ether of the internet, where it's fine, but it needs to escape. And so one of the things that I'd like to do in the hall is ask people what they want to do, because when they're here, they can create their own space, and facilitating other people to create space is incredibly important, because we're not the only community. And the more we keep growing because we keep putting the lighthouse beam out there and finding people in adjacent communities who want to participate in what we do and invite us to participate in what they do. And that's one of the ways to, I think, be really sex positive and maintain spaces like this.
The Venn diagram of overlapping weirdos has really generated and helped the hall, because we just reach into communities that are adjacent to ours and educate them about who we are, and all of a sudden they're members of our community, and it's really just been working.
Yeah.
Sure.
On the spot.
Just let everybody, if you want to, you, and again, if you say no, thank you for taking care of yourself.
This is me. They're great.
Hello, friends. My name is Brenda. I've been a member of the hall since you guys opened. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had just moved here from out of state. Czech Vet came by and was like, I'll check it out. And I think as a member, what I appreciate the most about the hall is just how much they're willing to talk to members, willing to educate at so many different levels. If you're new, they'll educate you accordingly. You can just like move up in your education and like learning. You don't come in intimidated. Just like big words and, oh gosh, I don't know what a cross is, or I don't know how to use any of this. And I feel like for myself personally, I feel like I've really grown and matured through my kink experience. I'm very fortunate and very thankful to have safe spaces around this area that allow me to be the little weirdo that I want to be and allow other little weirdos to be little weirdos, you know, let your freak flag fly. Yeah, and I guess it's just a little 2 cents as a member.
All right. Well, I think we gave everybody a chance, so... shit, we've covered a lot.
Very
much has happened.
We crisscrossed across sex positivity.
This is gonna be a two-parter episode. So if you just joined us for the second one, go back to the start. It'll make more sense.
Who are these weird people?
But just to reiterate one more time, how can folks find out more if they are interested?
We are all over the internet and all over the social medias. So we are on FetLife. You can find us there at Philly Music Hall. We're also on Facebook, where we are Philly Music Hall. We're also on Twitter at Music Hall Philly. And I think that's like all the social medias, right?
And if you're interested in Instagram, membership,
yes.
If you're interested in membership, you email membership@PhillyMusicHall.com mm-hmm. and our lovely member Bev, who you've been listening to, will probably get back to you.
Mm-hmm. And if you're interested in doing any programming, you can email us at programming@PhillyMusicHall.com as well, and work with Marty and, you know, tell us what you want to do.
We love ideas. Yeah. Bring us weird, kinky ideas.
More of the contests where I get to eat mac and cheese, though.
Oh, ooh. Yeah. We'd be into that.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right. We're really into food-based contests.
I'm really excited about January's contest.
Oh, yeah.
Can I know?
Yeah. Yes. It's as many candy canes.
Which one?
Oh, yeah. It's poles, most poles in your ho-ho holes. And it is... Timmer's dying.
Yeah.
It is... You pick a hole, any hole, we don't care. And the winner is the person who can fit as many candy canes straight into that hole as possible in five minutes.
Who says we aren't fun?
Whimsical. It's the holidays. Yeah.
Now I'm just thinking logistics.
So you gotta leave. If you're gonna use a genital hole, you gotta leave the plastic on because concerns about yeast infections.
We will provide female condoms and male condoms.
Oh yeah, we're also providing safer sex supplies for
some. Candy cane babies.
No candy cane.
I feel like how I won.
I don't know. Like if panda came out, but
a red panda would be awesome.
Yeah. All right. That's awesome. And I think that is the exact note upon which we end this episode. So thank you all for taking time and being a part of this and welcoming me into your kinky grandma house. I had a nice wander around. It was lovely. So everybody, I'll see you here.
Yeah.
So yes.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Thank you, everybody. And thanks for listening. And have a fantastic day.
Thanks, Timmery.
Thank you.
We did it!
Yeah!
Woo! Hey, Sex with Timmery listeners. I imagine that you are like me and you like free stuff. Free stuff is pretty great. It's especially great when you have it in time for Valentine's Day. So check this out. When you go to adamandeve.com and you select almost any one item, you're going to get it for 50% off. And that's inherently amazing by itself. But here's where it gets real. The free stuff. So when you enter my exclusive code at the checkout, and that's Timmery, T-I-M-A-R-E-E, not only do you get 50% off on that one item, but you're going to get 10 tantalizing free items. You're going to get 6 free movies. You're going to get a free mystery pack that includes an item for him, a special toy for her, and something that multiple people can enjoy. Plus free shipping. That is a lot of Valentine's stuff for free. So head on over to adamandeve.com and be sure to use my code. That's T-I-M-A-R-E-E. One more time. T-I-M-A-R-E-E at adamandeve.com. Hey, friends and family of Sex with Timmery. We are so grateful to have your listenership. We have the coolest fans in the world. It's pretty much the best. And we hope that the love is mutual. If you are interested in supporting the Sex with Timmery media, either the website, the podcast, head on over to patreon.com/sexwithtimmery and become a supporter. For as little as $1 a month, you can be a regular supporter and continue to bring independent media that provides the kind of information that you want to have out in the world. Over here at Sex with Timmery, we have been doing this stuff for years. As you've noticed, we've got over 200 episodes. The Sex with Timmery website has been up since 2008. We've been giving you the goods for absolutely no cost, and we will continue to do so as long as we can. So thank you so much for your listenership, and we do hope that you will check it out. Patreon.com/sexwithtimmery. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timmery. Sex with Timmery, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimmery.com, Sex with Timmery on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timmery_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you. There's a brand new way to get Sex with Timmery. In addition to this podcast and sexwithtimmery.com, you can check out some of our most fascinating conversations in our new column in SOT magazine. SOT is a very fun retro nudie magazine, and it's full of photos, art, culture, and sometimes pizza. You can read it for the articles, but you should also definitely read it for the nudity. The first issue is out now, available in print only, and it features 3 sexy pictorials along with art, writing, interviews, and not to mention that column from yours truly. SOT is ethically produced here in Philadelphia, and Sex with Timmery listeners can get 20% off by ordering their copy at SOTMAG, SOUGHTMAG.com, and entering the coupon code Timmery, T-I-M-A-R-E-E, at checkout. That's SOTMAG.com and the coupon code Timmery.